Cover Jacksonville, kicking off a campaign to reach out to this area's most vulnerable kids. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you stayed dry over the weekend. We're going to get you started live at 9 and make sure to subscribe to that daily podcast too on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we will take your calls on efforts to close gaps for the state's uninsured. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, First Coast Success Profiles, Parvez Ahmed. Plus, Culpepper on a big heartbreak for the Sharks. And speaking of storms, hurricane preparedness is still a big priority this season. We'll tell you about it. All of that ahead. But first this hour, how to close the gap for this area's most vulnerable kids. There are more than 18,000 uninsured children here in Duval County, and many of them qualify for low-cost health insurance through the Florida Kid Care Program. But they're not enrolled. Why? Well, their parents just don't know about it. Now, in July of last year, the National League of Cities selected Jacksonville as one of eight cities around the country to receive a grant to fix this. The Jacksonville Children's Commission and the city are leading the charge to implement Cover Jacksonville, a campaign to bridge the gap for the uninsured. This morning, we begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome Cheryl Townsend, Cover Jacksonville Project Director with the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Cheryl, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to see you. And when it comes to how to cover the state's uninsured, especially our children, what are your questions and thoughts? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. So let's begin with that number. Right off the bat, it's sad to see that we still have a huge hole of coverage in this area. 18,000 children in this area still remain uninsured. That's sobering, a number to look at, Cheryl.
It is a sobering number, and of that number, there are more than 16,000 who currently qualify but are not enrolled for the Florida Healthy Kids Program. This is the group of families who are your working-class family, who make a little bit too much money to qualify for Medicaid or your free entitlement coverage. These are your families who are working and don't make quite enough money to afford a typical premium that's provided through one of your major insurance providers. So they would qualify for a Florida Healthy Kids program where they could pay $15 or $20 a month for up to eight children and have everything covered, from doctor visits to dental visits, co-pays, emergency room visits and hospital stays, mental health services, and more.
We're talking working parents whose household income is up to $48,000 a year.
That's correct.
Can qualify for this.
A family of four can make up to $48,500 and still qualify for Florida Kid Care.
Why do you think it's been so hard to get this out to the public? It's exciting that finally now there's some grant money available so that you can do this work. You can get this information out there.
Well, there's just typically been little investment in our city and in Florida as a whole. In fact, Florida has the most uninsured children in all southeastern states and at over 400,000. So we're working to change that. And the National League of Cities recognized that in inviting us to participate in receiving this grant. Florida Healthy Kids does a good job of marketing on a state level, but they don't dive into individual communities. So it's our job as city entities to convene partners. And that's one of the things that we've done through this grant is convened an enrollment network with more than 18 locations where families can go and receive free in-person enrollment assistance. Some of them are walk-in sites where they don't need an appointment, and others they can make an appointment at their convenience to go and meet with an enrollment assister to make sure they're successful in completing their application the first time.
We'll go to your calls on Cover Jacksonville and your questions about gaps in the state's insurance for vulnerable populations in just a moment at 549-2937. How does a program like this, Cheryl, sort of stand in the gap when it comes to that so-called donut hole that we've heard a lot about here in Florida? The state famously or infamously, depending on your point of view, did not expand Medicaid. And so there are about a million people in the state who make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough money to get regular health insurance. And so programs like these seem to sort of fill in that donut hole.
They do. And Florida Healthy Kids works to provide this coverage for those families. And I think that when families are made aware of this, for every family I find, there's a different aha moment. It's that, oh, dental's covered, or it's only $20 a month for all of my children, or if they have to go to the emergency room, it's covered. I think for every family, there's a different aha moment. And so the fact that they can pay only $20 a month, we don't have to think of them being part of that donut hole anymore. And then families would only need to worry about coverage for the adults. We know that every child needs coverage. And when kids are covered, they are more apt to have fewer days missed in school, do better in school, and have higher graduation rates.
Here are some details about this program. Again, as Cheryl said, it can cost as little as $15 to $20 per household. This is Cover Jacksonville. Your child gets doctor visits, checkups, shots, and prescriptions, dental, hearing, vision care, hospital care, surgeries, emergency care, mental health care. That's an often overlooked benefit for kids. This is for children under the age of 19, children who are Florida residents. And again, this is for a family that earns up to $48,000 a year. They can still qualify for this health plan. CoverJax211.com is the website to visit, and application assistance is free. Are there any wrinkles or problems going through the process that people need help? Do you need to hold people's hands as they go through the application process?
That's what we found, is most families, it's insurance, and so it's complicated. The application is lengthy, and unless you are an expert in applying for insurance, most families do need assistance, and we are here to provide that. So at any of our enrollment locations, they can receive that. Families can simply dial 211 and talk with a specialist at 211 and find out where the closest enrollment location is to them throughout Jacksonville, or they can visit our website at coverjax211.com and find all of those locations on the website as well.
How much demand is there for this in Duval County and around the state?
As I mentioned, more than 16,000 children in Duval are currently qualified but not enrolled. So there is quite a demand, and around the state, over 400,000.
When it comes to the uninsured in this state and any of your questions about Cover Jacksonville, what are your questions? Get on the line right now, 549-2937, as we speak with Cheryl Townsend of the Jacksonville Children's Commission, 549-2937. Jeff in St. Augustine. Hey, Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm glad to hear you guys have this program in Jacksonville, because in St. John's County, I mean, there's nothing. There used to be two computer stations at the health department. They took those out, and I had actually a Blue Cross plan that my kids were covered on, or a Florida Blue, not Blue Cross, and most of the pediatricians in St. Augustine don't want to take it. So they actually said, try to re-enroll your kids in Florida Kid Care, which I tried to do, and if you don't make enough money, you can't voluntarily pay the premium. And then they don't know the eligibility either. I mean, Florida Kid Care called me, and I said, well, isn't the eligibility different age different, or income criteria different between ages 5 and older? And it is, because that's the crazy thing, is there's a break at age 5. My daughter's 4, my son's 8 for eligibility. And the people at Florida Kid Care, when they called me, didn't know the difference in eligibility. And it's an extremely difficult process. If your income varies from year to year or month to month because you're self-employed, it's an extremely onerous amount of paperwork they require, perhaps on a monthly basis if your income varies a lot.
Jeff, thanks for sharing that, and I'm sure you're not alone. Cheryl Townsend, what about those types of problems people are having?
Jeff, you are not alone, and that is why we have people who can help you. One of our enrollment partners does serve your county. If you want to go to our website and call the Player Center for Child Health at Wolfson, they do serve St. John's County through a grant that they have, and they can sit down with you and look into your application and help you apply. Or if you have If anyone throughout the state of Florida has questions and would like to talk to someone directly at Florida Healthy Kids, you can always call Florida Healthy Kids at 1-888-540-KIDS.
549-2937, meanwhile, is the number to join the show. Nay is in Jacksonville Beach. Nay, good morning. How are you today? Hey, Nay, turn your radio down and go ahead.
Yes, I have had children enrolled in Healthy Kids in the past. I encourage you to call the 1-800-HEALTHY-KIDS phone number, and you'll understand why it is so incredibly frustrating. It's difficult to get someone on the phone. I thought my kids were still enrolled, and lo and behold, they're not anymore. They're now over 19, but even when they were covered, there was no dermatologist in network, so we had to pay out of pocket and go to a non-approved person because my son needed to go to a dermatologist. Or no, we didn't know dental was covered, and I would think I am close to expert level on insurance because I'm disabled and on Medicare, and I just got so incredibly frustrated with it. It was just impossible. And I actually do live in St. John's County, and I didn't get to hear the response from the gentleman or your response to the gentleman because I was on hold and I didn't want it to squawk when I got off hold. So.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that, Nay. Cheryl, obviously people want to sort of sound off about some of the headaches they've had. So I so appreciate you being here to connect with them. What advice do you have for her?
Again, I'm sorry for the difficulty you've had trying to reach Healthy Kids. I would say when you call, one of the options that's not provided is to dial zero, and you can reach a person on the phone. I frequently use that when I have questions, and I hope that your questions can be answered. If not, you can always call any of our enrollment partners or come to Duval. While this grant serves Duval County that we have through the city of Jacksonville, we would be happy to help you if you wanted to come here and we could sit down with you.
Yeah, and again, the website here in town is coverjacks211.com. 549-2937, Scott in Orange Park. Hey, Scott. Good morning.
I'm Winston Scott Wilson. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
The whole thing is you can get hundreds of people call all day long with testimonials about how this affects them. The problem is basically legislative. The problem goes from Tallahassee. It's top down. There are things in place, and Florida denies accepting money from the federal government that we've already paid in tax dollars. And that mindset has to change. People need to get politically active. They need to get informed. They need to vote. It's extremely sad that how rich and this country is, where we've come from, and being basically number one in the world to watching our infant mortality rate go up. There's just too much that has to come from top down. Now, all the programs are great if you can use them, but the way the programs are designed, like calling in to try and get somebody, it's just, they make it so difficult. They make so many hoops that they set it up where people who are eligible will not be able to or have a really difficult time getting or maintaining coverage. And until that changes, nothing's really going to change. And that's basically my take on it.
Thanks, Scott. That's Scott down in Orange Park. Cheryl, I know you're here to share some positive news, which we so appreciate, but clearly there's a lot of frustration out there. And how do you, when you're dealing with families who are trying to navigate the bureaucracy, the politics of this, it's got to be frustrating for you too. And what are your thoughts about all this?
We clearly empathize with them, and we do want to see the state move towards a more efficient process. And that's the main reason we have this grant, is to first make them aware of what's available, because so many families just do not know that they're eligible, or they think it's for another family or a different class of family, when so many families can qualify, even those with higher incomes. But we do want to, we can't control anything legislatively through this grant. Those aren't our goals.
By the way, and the grant came from where?
Through the National League of Cities, who works with city municipalities.
Yeah. And so if you're just tuning in, Jacksonville is one of a handful of cities chosen for this grant to get the word out about low to no cost health insurance for this area's uninsured children. If you come from a household with an income of up to $48,000 a year, but you cannot afford health insurance for your child, you may qualify for this. It's coverjacks211.com. And let's go back to your calls and questions right now at 549-2937. Calls from across the listening area coming into the show right now this morning. David in Palatka is on the line. Hi, David. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This might sound like a silly question or irrelevant, but I thought that with the mandate from the federal government to have health insurance, that this shouldn't be an issue. I thought that with Obamacare that everyone had to become insured.
Yeah, David, that's an interesting question. Let's talk about that. With the advent of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, a huge change and a hugely controversial change in this country, Cheryl Townsend, the fact remains that we still do not have universal coverage in this country. Let's talk about that for a minute.
That's a great point. This is one way that families can ensure their kids are covered at a low cost premium each month for only $20, and they do need to be covered. So there is a penalty that they'll be faced with if they're not covered. So I would encourage any family with children to look into this if they're not currently covered.
And the reality is that under one of the reasons the Affordable Care Act was so controversial is people that were opposed to it didn't like the idea of being penalized if they were not able to obtain health insurance. This is one solution that you're proposing, a low-cost way to obtain health insurance for your child.
Absolutely.
Yeah, $15 to $20 a month. Is that per child or for every child?
That's
for your whole family.
For families who qualify for the subsidized coverage, it's $15 or $20 for up to 8 children. And for families who maybe make a little bit more than what the qualification for subsidized coverage, they can choose a full pay premium and still get the same great coverage. And those would be families who maybe can't afford what is coming out of what their providers pay through what their employers cover, or if they just don't have another option, there's still an option to cover their kids.
Here's a tweet coming into the show from Jesse. Insurance for my daughter has been incredibly frustrating to navigate. Thanks for opening my eyes to CoverJacks211. And we're going to take a few more of your calls at 549-2937. Michael in Jacksonville. Hi, Michael. Happy Monday. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I had a question for your guest, and that is, I am the secretary of the local labor council here in Jacksonville, and I work with about 53 different labor unions. Now, most of our members have health insurance, but they have families that don't have health insurance. And I was wondering if your guest ever comes out and talks to groups.
Oh, excellent question. Thanks for that, Michael. Cheryl Townsend, I'm sure you do, but let's talk about how you can connect with groups.
Absolutely, Michael. Thank you. We would love to come out and meet with your labor unions. We have been to about 30 back-to-school events this month, and we will go to any organization that wants us to speak with their colleagues or small businesses. The Children's Commission is also working with all of our after-school programs to identify the children that we work with and fund, as well as summer camps and many other schools. So please contact us. I can be reached at 630-6405.
And as you mentioned a minute ago, back to school is an excellent time for you to be getting the word out about this, because this is a time when parents are thinking about their kids' immunizations, their kids' academics. You're trying to get them thinking, too, if their child isn't insured, to be thinking about this as part of their package, part of their agenda, too, for the school year.
That's right. And for many children who are interested in playing sports at a higher level, particularly in high school, they have to have health insurance. It's a requirement.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Cheryl Townsend, director of Cover Jacksonville. Thanks to a grant through the National League of Cities, Jacksonville is one of a handful of cities that now has a program that allows a family of four in the city with an income of up to $48,000 a year to qualify for very low-cost health insurance for their child, $15 to $20 a month. So if you're unable to afford health insurance for your kid, this is a program you might want to look into. It's coverjacks211.com. Let's take another call. It's Yolanda in Springfield right now. Hey, Yolanda, how are you?
Good morning. I'm calling just to make a comment. My son, he's 26 years old now, but I strongly encourage families to participate in this. I worked for Miami-Dade County many, many years ago, and this is for people who have those types of jobs where they can choose coverage on their job. And I chose not to. I chose to cover myself, and I chose to cover my son through the Florida Kid Care, and this was like 15 years ago. And it came out much cheaper, and the coverage was Cigna, dental, and health insurance, and it was great. And I just paid the full coverage, which ended up being much cheaper than going through my employer. So that's just an option for people to look into who have jobs that where they could choose coverage through the employer and just opt not to.
Yolanda, thanks for that.
That's a great example of the full pay premium really being a benefit to families as an alternative option. There have been a few employees and coworkers that I have done the same when their child has needed surgery this year, and they've decided to take them off for a year because it was more beneficial. And it becomes a family choice of what's more affordable for your family.
Okay, so any final thoughts about this so that people can really get in touch with you? Because as we've seen by all the calls, there's so much interest and demand.
Any family in Jacksonville can call 211 and talk to a call center specialist, or they can visit coverjacks211.com.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Cheryl Townsend is the Cover Jacksonville director. She's with the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Again, just dial 211 or visit the website to find out more. Much more still ahead. Later, Cole Pepper on the Sharks' heartbreaking championship loss, plus hurricane preparedness tips. Yep, we're not out of the woods yet this season. But up next, First Coast Success Profiles, Dr. Parvez Ahmed. That's in a moment.
Hello, I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information, and stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
A new law in North Dakota aims to set parameters for police use of drones.
Could be a taser, sound cannons, pepper spray, beanbags, rubber bullets, just about anything you can think of can be attached to a drone.
Debating the aerial height restrictions on civil liberties in America, later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, he's a UNF professor, a Fulbright scholar, and a prominent local voice on interfaith issues. In today's edition of First Coast Success, Karen Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record speaks with Dr. Parvez Ahmed.
Parvez Ahmed is well known in Jacksonville. He is a University of North Florida professor of finance, a former U.S. Fulbright scholar, and a community leader on civil discourse. Ahmed is a two-term member of the Jacksonville Human Rights Commission and a frequent writer and speaker about Islam and the American Muslim experience. Last year, OneJax awarded him the Humanitarian Silver Medal for his work toward overcoming bias, bigotry, and racism in Jacksonville. Parvez Ahmed, welcome to First Coast Success.
Glad to be here.
Well, in the time you've been here, you've taken a highly visible role in Jacksonville. What motivates you to do so?
Well, part of it is, you know, we as members of the human race, we do have an obligation towards each other, regardless of what racial background we belong to, regardless of what national identity we identify with or our religion. We all have an obligation towards each other, and it becomes more so in a globalized village like today. And part of it is also my upbringing. I was raised in a family where having a social responsibility ethic was important. And it's part of my faith. So all of that combines to kind of inspire me to try to do as best as I can.
Talk about your family growing up. Was it a big family? And who were your mentors, or who was your mentor?
I was the only child of my parents. So from that perspective, my immediate family was small, but I grew up in India with a lot of extended family around me, lots of cousins and uncles and aunts. A weekend gathering could easily be 20 plus people, and that's just being very modest. With my extended family, we have people spanning all ends of this political spectrum, from the hard left, almost communist left, to the Islamist right. And so our family gatherings were very interesting conversations. And being in that setting kind of gave me the ability to have the patience to hear all sides of an argument and also understand the power of a civil discourse in trying to find common ground with others. And that's what I try to do with my civil discourse work. People naturally have differences in opinion, but how can we figure out where the common ground is? And what can we do once we discover that common ground? And that's an important question that I try to wrestle with. And I'm very fortunate in this city that there are many, many good people that are engaged in this work.
Well, in volunteering and taking a leadership role in Jacksonville, and especially as a mayoral appointee to the Human Rights Commission, you've gone through some challenging city council hearings and other events. And in one well-publicized event, a member of council asked you to pray to your God. And during public comments, you were criticized for your former chairmanship for the Council on American Islamic Relations. And how do you respond to those questions and comments? And are you surprised by those?
I think the comment about pray to your God was a very inartful comment. I don't think so. Councilman Redman meant it the way it came across. He apologized for that. He sent me a letter. It was a very gracious letter. I thanked him for that apology. So I think we have all moved on from that. I know that incident gets replayed a lot in people's conversations and in people's mind. But I think it was a moment in our history that we have gone past. And I hope that because of the challenges and the conversations that it has created, I do believe that we as a city, we are better off. As to my chairmanship of the Council on American Islamic Relations, it was quite unfortunate how that association became front and center in the conversation, because nothing about my chairmanship itself was in contention. In other words, nobody ever said that you did this or you said this or the organization did this when you were the chair. That was either controversial or could be a source of not approving somebody to the Human Rights Commission. It was all based on past, about some employee in the organization did something or somebody in the organization said something, or the organization itself did something, often in my, before I joined the organization. So it was kind of disturbing because it was very un-American in my view. It was guilt by association. We as Americans, we take pride in not doing that. We try to judge people by their individual abilities and their character, not based on who they associate with.
Now, Jacksonville, we have a new administration in Jacksonville. We're going into another 4 years, and the motto for Mayor Curry is One Jacksonville, One City. How do you see yourself as becoming a part of that on the Human Rights Commission and in any other positions that you might take?
I think it's a very noble aspiration. The challenge is, how do we get there? We see that Jacksonville is a divided city. Between races, on religious grounds, we are often quite divided, and also, perhaps more so, increasingly divided along our economic lines, income inequality, and the social disproportionate benefits that it gives to certain people and the disproportionate benefits that it does not accrue to certain people is a big challenge in the city. So it's great to have that vision. I think the challenge will be, how do we accomplish it? It will certainly take mayoral leadership, and I wish Mayor Curry the best. The challenge will be, how can we all work with each other, cooperate with each other, to make this vision a reality for everybody, so that everybody has a shared responsibility and the prosperity of our region is shared among people. And we can then move past some of our divisive rhetoric, some of the divisive history of the city, and finally be a city and a community that we all deserve.
Do you have any political aspirations?
No, none. Zero.
With your knowledge of Jacksonville and of finance and of economic trends, what sort of advice or insights might you offer the city for its economic development efforts?
I think economic development needs to take into account Jacksonville's most precious assets, which is our natural resources, which means that we, as a city and as businesses and communities who inhabit this area of the world, we have to be much more conscientious about our stewardship of the environment and also more conscious about our social responsibility towards each other. I direct a center at UNF, the Center for Sustainable Business Practices. This is what we talk about in sustainability, which is a three-legged stool of three P's: people, profit, and the planet. And for the stool to stand up, you need all three of them. You need corporations to thrive. They have to be profitable. But profitability can be enhanced by being good stewards of the environment, which is taking care of the planet, and also having a socially responsible ethic, which is taking care of the people that help the corporation attain the profits. So if we can balance between those three elements in whatever development we undertake, whether it is dredging the port or whether it is downtown redevelopment or trying to attract new businesses to the area, I think we will all be better off.
Well, what's next for you?
I'm writing books. I have a couple of book contracts that I need to get done. And then I want to also spend a little bit more time traveling, particularly to parts of the world that helps me with my writing about Islam and the American Muslim experience, not only overseas, but also around the country.
Well, Parvez Ahmed, finance professor at the University of North Florida and community leader, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thanks a lot, Karen.
And read a transcript of Karen's talk with Parvez Ahmed in today's Daily Record. We're back in a moment.
Today's First Coast Success was brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee, because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus Rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times, because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Times have changed.
Relax Radio is easy listening with an edge.
And I love the fact that I can hear 1 minute Ella Fitzgerald singing, you know, some torchy number, and then I will hear something Van Morrison.
Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information. Hey, where did
we go? Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, luckily for Florida, Tropical Storm Erica didn't turn into much over the weekend, but hurricane season is by no means over. Hurricane Preparedness Awareness Month starts tomorrow, and several named storms are still in our future over the next several weeks, so it always pays to be prepared. Bryce Clark of ServPro Jax is a local business owner and an expert on hurricane preparedness, and he joins us now. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Good to see you.
And as I mentioned, September kicks off National Hurricane Preparedness Month, so you've got some timely tips for us. You really know what you're doing, too. So as we talk about preparedness, there's so much to be aware of. First off, let's talk about the core of your business. How do you deal with these issues, especially if there's storm damage, water damage, when we deal with this here in Florida?
When it's a major storm event, obviously safety is first. Whether the area needs to be cleared by FEMA before we can come in, make sure power's off, et cetera, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And so everybody that lives in Florida has heard these tips before, but what do you recommend families do to get prepared before a storm strikes?
Obviously, meeting points for your family. If you're gonna, it depends if you're evacuating or staying. You know, everyone knows the 1 gallon of water a person per day, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And if you actually need to evacuate, God forbid, what's the checklist you recommend at ServPro?
I think moving valuables up to the highest level in the home, you know, packing obviously emergency papers and family materials with you.
Mm-hmm. Turn off water, turn off natural gas. That's a great tip. Move the valuables up high. Get that first aid kit. Insurance documents. What do you recommend, like having a burn box, like having valuable documents in a fireproof box?
I think that's always important. It's also uploading those documents to the cloud so you could access it basically anywhere and you don't have to worry about hauling it around.
Now, one thing you specialize in is how to mitigate when it comes to water and mold damage. Luckily, with Erica, we didn't really see anything but a little bit of rain, and that was a nice sigh of relief. But in terms of water damage, how can people deal with that, and how do you come in?
Well, usually before any sort of microbial growth happens, you have 72 hours. People, if your house gets flooded, the first thing you should do is try to block up your furniture. Depending on how high the water is, turn the power off so no one gets electrocuted. And then we would come in and extract the water, set up dehumidifiers, remove any damaged materials that can't be restored.
And Florida has a mold problem anyway, doesn't it? I mean, this is a damp environment. Even if we don't have a hurricane or a tropical storm, a lot of homeowners deal with mold.
With the relative humidity levels in Florida, over 80%, it's perfect conditions for microbial growth. So, yeah, it's very important to always be aware. Can't leave your HVAC system off for an extended period of time.
What else can we do to safeguard against this in our homes and living areas?
The most important thing is maintenance of your HVAC system, really to prevent any kind of mold. Make sure, you know, all your exterior openings are sealed well.
Have somebody come and check it every few years.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people forget to do that, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to pay you a lot more money, don't they?
Yes, ma'am.
So you're in business because we don't do what we're supposed to do.
Oh, right.
But luckily, you're giving us some really good tips. You also handle carpet, ceilings, tile. There's so much that can get damaged, isn't there?
Pretty much. If it's in a house or a building, we work on it.
Wow. Anything else people need to know? Because as we mentioned, Hurricane Preparedness Awareness Month kicks off tomorrow, September 1.
I just think have a plan in place is the most important thing. It doesn't have to be the most detailed, but Anything is better than nothing.
Yeah, and you want to give a phone number too, don't you?
Our number is 904-721-2230.
All right, it's ServPro Jack's Hurricane Preparedness Month begins tomorrow. Several more named storms are in the cards for us here in Florida, so it always pays to be prepared. Bryce Clark of ServPro Jack's, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And in a moment, Cole Pepper on the Sharks' heartbreaking loss for the championship. That's after this.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
Spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for The Takeaway, The World, and All Things Considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
When you're in a band and you go on tour, do you go where the diehard fans are, or do you go where the money is?
On U2's last tour, they played Los Angeles, but they didn't even stop in San Diego. They went straight to Phoenix. Sometimes we're just a second thought.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Don't take it personally, man. It's not about you. The story next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
A Hank Mattson poem about 19th century Florida cowman Jacob Summerlin was set to music and has earned the 2015 Will McLean Best New Florida Song Contest. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Hank Mattson, who is known as the Cracker Cowboy Poet. We'll discuss the Labor Day hurricane of 1935 and the Ku Klux Klan in Florida. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Sharks fall just short of an Arena Bowl championship.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
So close, but just not quite there. Cole Pepper's here now with the disappointing highlights. Hey, Cole, good morning. So sorry to see the Sharks. Oh, it's just a heartbreaker, isn't it?
It was so close, Melissa. They had the lead in the third quarter and just saw the team that, quite honestly, was the best team in the Arena League this year, the San Jose Sabercats, steamrolled them in the second half and wind up winning going away. The Sabercats, by the way, only lost one game all year, so this is certainly nothing to brush off. But a terrific year for the Sharks, who spent a substantial amount of money on some big-name players in the offseason, and it certainly paid off, or nearly so. Certainly paid off getting all the way to the Arena Bowl. It'll be interesting going forward now, not so much with the Sharks, but with the Arena Football League. The league has folded two of its teams. They now have 10 teams, which you can play a league with 10 teams, but if you have 10 teams and it's growing, you feel a lot better about the future of the league than 10 teams and contracting, which is the case right now with the Arena Football League. I think there are a lot of questions that a lot of owners of teams in the AFL have about where the league is going and what's going to happen next.
Right. I've heard a lot about that. Are we looking at arena football going away from this market, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's about going away from this market. The Sharks are one of the more secure teams in the league. The problem is not the Sharks. The problem is if you can't find enough teams, you know, to compete against, you can't do it. So New Orleans and Las Vegas were both contracted or shut down because of they just weren't making the money. They weren't being run the right way. So they've got to find enough other owners around the country who are interested in making an investment, building a brand, and building a franchise within the Arena Football League. And that's always the key to a professional league. You know, if you're a minor league and you're feeding into a major league, like say the Suns are, that feed up to AAA and then all the way up to the Marlins, it's one thing. If you're not directly associated with a parent club, it's a different kind of ownership expectation. And I think that's one of the challenges they're finding in the Arena Football League right now.
I personally love arena football. It's climate controlled, Culpepper. unlike a Jaguars preseason game, but I know we need to move on and talk about that because that was on national TV.
It was. Plenty of rain and plenty of Blake Bortles, who played very well. I think probably the best sign you could have expected or hoped for the Jaguars was to have Bortles have a great performance in his third preseason game. The third preseason game is always the most important. The starters play the most in those games. There's a little bit of game planning, although not a whole lot, that goes on for that. So terrific performance by Blake Bortles, who was very sharp, led the Jaguars to a couple of touchdown drives, threw a touchdown pass as well. There are some questions, though, that are building here about the Jaguars' defense. This is not something we thought we'd necessarily be asking questions about, but the Jaguars' defense has not been very good this preseason. The pass rush has been non-existent, and they just haven't won the line of scrimmage. So I am surprised at this point. My expectation coming into this year was that the defense would be ahead of the offense. And the only way the offense would be ahead of the defense would be if there were a lot of injuries on the defensive side of the football. And in fairness, there have been some, and particularly on the defensive line. And Derek Barks is still waiting to come back from his knee surgery from last year. A number of pass rushers have been unable to get out on the field. But the defense needs to catch up because right now the offense looks to be ahead of the defense, which is a good sign for those of us in Jacksonville who like to see points put up on the board.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And so the Jags making their cut to 75 players, going on the road to Washington, the final preseason matchup, and the season opener 10 days away. My gosh, I can't believe we're coming up on it.
Yeah, it's rapidly approaching. I will say, 10 days after that preseason game, by the way, I would say that one interesting thing to note as far as the Jaguars roster is concerned, when they made their cuts, there was nobody's name on that list of cuts that really shocked anybody, but there was a name that wasn't on the list that was a bit surprising. That's Jason Myers, who's a kicker. He's Josh Scobie's backup. He's shown a very strong leg. It appears that the Jaguars are going to try to trade Myers for a draft pick somewhere along the line. I'm not sure how much you get for a backup kicker, quite honestly. He'd be a starter for somebody else. There's also a line of thought that Scobie could be traded, which I think would be a ridiculous proposition at this point. But we'll see. Certainly, the Jaguars have two very good kickers on the roster right now, and they're only going to carry one into the season.
Now, we were talking a minute ago about Tropical Storm Erica, which really fizzled out, but we still got a lot of rain this weekend. That didn't deter the Armada supporters, Cole, as you found. Those soccer fans really are supporting the team.
Yeah, on Saturday night, there was a 90-minute lightning storm. That the lightning delay because of the storm that pushed the kickoff back from 7:30 till a little bit after 9 o'clock rather. And I was amazed. About 7,000 tickets were sold for the game. I would say somewhere, and I'm just eyeballing this, 5,000 or so showed up, maybe 5,500 showed up, undeterred by the rain and the storm, and had to be over 3,000 that were there at the very end. So the game didn't get over with until something close till 11 o'clock, and the supporters were still out there rabid and supporting. So hats off to those sturdy souls who stayed all the way through the evening.
Now, last but not least, Cole, you are known as a barbecue man. I'm throwing this at you out of the blue, but of course you do a barbecue championship in Jacksonville that is a beloved event. You are a barbecue aficionado. We're getting an email for you from a listener named Joseph. He wants to know from you, Cole Pepper, is Black Jack's barbecue sauce still available? And if so, where can I get it? I have no idea, but I figured you might know the answer to this.
So this was an old barbecue sauce that a business partner of mine and I made and marketed a little bit. He had a barbecue restaurant that's since closed, and we used to use it to promote on the radio. And so it's not in stores. There is a rumor that somewhere tucked away in a storage facility somewhere, there are a couple of cases left. So we can see if we can take care of the. Of Joseph.
All right, Joseph, if you're listening, you need to email Cole and he'll hook you up. I'll try to make that happen later today. Cole, always a pleasure. Thanks for calling into the show. Have a great week.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. You can subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Next on Die and Ream, there are more gun-related deaths in America than any other industrialized nation. Diane discusses what makes the U.S. different and why some hold out hope that change is possible. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.